Thanks to HelloFresh for supporting today's show. Receive $35 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code CURRENTGEEK35. Remember, go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code CURRENTGEEK35 to get $35 off your first week of deliveries. Thanks, HelloFresh.
I have
Current Geek!
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars. Geeks of the world and you, to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson, and he's Tom Merritt.
I survived CES, Scott.
Did you? How well did you survive CES is the question.
Well, okay. Actually, I only went for a couple of nights, so it was pretty easy.
Yeah, and that tell me the big thing you saw. Like, right now, on the spot, can't think about it too long, the thing that blew your mind. Go.
There was a guy laying down with a fan in his face and a VR headset on.
Wow. I really miss CES this year.
I'm not making that up either. That was
he
a
was
thing
playing a flight sim, time. Right?
Yeah, flight simulator probably, or who knows. I mean, was that a big thing this year, like smells and wind division
there was
and all
a
that?
Smell, there was a smell thing that was going to like give you smells to go along with your virtual reality. There was a foot control thing so you could like tilt your whole body and control lots of VR stuff, lots of 4K TVs, lots of autonomous cars, lots of Internet of Things.
Wow. All right. Well, successful year yet again in Las Vegas. Not a successful Current Geek unless we have guests. Although last week was pretty good. We got a lot of good feedback about the Scott and Tom year wrap-up thing. People liked it.
Yeah, that was fun to do.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. We'll look forward to doing that next year whenever we have things to sum up for this year. But let's get our guests out here. Let's start with Stephanie DeBruzzo. See?
Yay, I got it.
I totally nailed
I'm
it.
I'm very proud.
It is really awesome to have you on. Now, I understand that where's your stuff right here? Oh, I lost your stuff. Why did I lose your stuff? Tell us about Stephanie. Tell me what you're up to and what you're doing.
Well, I'm a Muppet performer on Sesame Street. Right now we're on hiatus from that. That's sort of my main gig other than doing voiceovers. But we have something really exciting going on right now in the world of Sesame Street. My friend Matt Vogel, he's a puppeteer. He's been doing stuff for a long time. He started this Facebook Live show called Below the Frame. And we've been doing that live when we're in production on Thursdays at 1:45 Eastern. And on the hiatus weeks, we've been putting out little extras, little videos, interviewing puppeteers. We even did a best of, even though we've only done two official live shows and a pilot. We've got a lot of fun stuff lined up for 2017. I usually run camera. I wrote the theme songs. I've been writing a lot of music for a lot of really fun videos coming up. For Sesame fans, it should be a lot of fun.
Oh my gosh. I feel like I'm in like royalty people here. Like, this is a huge deal to know that we're hanging out with a puppeteer. Yes, that's so cool.
Oh, I'm glad, because most people make fun of them like mimes and clowns.
Oh, no. You've had your hands up the backsides of some of my favorite characters in the world. Like, that's amazing.
I've had my hand up the arse of legends, and I have sat at the crotch of greatness.
Oh, my gosh.
No, it's true. Like, all the celebrities that come on the show, when we're working with them, you know, we're on the ground, and they're standing up, and you do the math, and that's the title of my autobiography. I have sat at the crotches of greatness.
That's so cool. I've
when
seen...
You, when you do your podcast, are your hands out of shot always?
No, we do the podcasts as us. Sometimes a character will come visit us, but we're normal people. It's just we do a very interesting, abnormal job.
What impresses? So I remember being a kid and watching like Jim Henson and these other guys, and they would show the behind the scenes stuff, and it would blow my mind because they're all mushed down in this horrible position, and their arms are up there, and I'm sure you know all about the weird strain that comes from that and all that stuff. And I just remember being, man, I want to be a puppeteer so bad one day. And then as I got older, I went, I don't think I could stand that long, hold my arm that way. And it kind of fell away as a dream, but I'm always really impressed by that.
Thanks. What I like about it the most is that you find yourself working with the same people I've been there for 23 years, and these are the same people. It's like this ensemble, and very few actors get to work with the same group of people for an extended period of time.
Well,
I've worked with on other puppet shows and other things. The world of television puppetry is pretty small. So
I was going to ask you one other question before we move on to our other guests. So Adam, don't worry, we're getting to you, buddy.
Oh, no worries.
Are you, do you ever do any of the touring that they do? Like they'll do concerts around the country and that kind of thing where you have to sort of do the same sort of thing, but on stage?
Those are a different show. Those are full body costumes. Mm. For a long time, that was done by a company called V Corp. I think it's a different company now running those Sesame Street live shows. Mm. Yeah, that's a whole different beast with a whole different, very talented bunch of acrobats and dancers and people who do something very different than what we do. That I couldn't do that.
Mm. Well, I'm glad it takes all kinds, and I'm glad to see that. I'm glad to see that we just have a puppeteer on the show. I don't know why I'm so excited about this.
I also do other acting. You know, I'm a performer and I do voiceovers and all sorts of other things. So it's I don't just have my hand up a puppet's arse all day long. So fret not. I'm not that scary.
Well, no worries. Later in the show, we'll give you a chance to sort of point everybody back in the right directions again and get them to see your stuff because it all sounds pretty great to me. Also joining us, he's the one, the only, the returning Adam Christensen. Adam, what's going on?
Hey. Not much. Same old stuff.
MacCast still one of my favorite podcasts since like 2005. That's how long I feel like I've been listening to you, man.
Doing that. Well, yeah, I've been doing it since 2004. So you were there in the early days.
Yeah.
So very early. Doing the Mac and Apple thing. And that continues. Never changes. Stephanie, I actually might know one of your peers.
Seriously?
Your cohorts. Yeah. Grant Pachoco.
Grant. I'm trying to think. I don't think he's worked on Sesame. Does he do more live stuff?
He does Puppet Up, and he works for the Henson Group. And I think
that's where I know that name.
May have done some projects with him in the past.
So. That's where I know that name. I think he had just left Puppet Up. I subbed for Puppet Up in New York for like 9 performances. That's where I know that name. He's a fantastic performer, but I don't know that our paths have crossed. Mm. But yeah. I'm a fan of his. Yeah, he's great.
Well, look at all this connective tissue here. And everyone's using Macs here and there in our lives, so there's another thing there. So we're all just like each other.
I'm surrounded by my Apple products, of course.
Well, sweet. Well, we'll get we're going to get deep into more what you're up to these days, Adam, and where people can find you in a bit. But before all of that, let's dive into today's headlines. Oh, that's quiet for some reason. Hold on. Here we go. Sorry.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, what happened this week in the world of geek?
The thing that everybody on the subreddit was talking about was the NVIDIA GeForce Now cloud gaming service coming to Windows and Mac machines. This is a cloud service that they've had available on the NVIDIA Shield device, which is the standalone device you just hook up to your television. Now you can get it on Windows and Mac, and they changed the way you pay for it. It used to be you would buy access to a game, and then the game would be played over the internet on a machine that was more powerful than the one you had, so you'd get the advantage of that without having to buy a new machine. Now, you'll get that same service, but pay by the hour instead of by the game. That starts at $25 for 20 hours coming in March. You can still buy games, but the sort of fuzzy details on this is they said you'll be able to use the games you already own in Steam. So it sounds like you'll be able to go onto one of these cloud PCs, log into your Steam account, and get access to your library. Whether they're going to let you play everything in your library or not is sort of the question that remains to be answered.
Yeah, and there's also, so in theory, all of the launchers, Uplay, your Blizzard launcher, Good Old Games or GOG, all those things will also be part of this. It's a really strange initiative because part of me thinks, oh, all right, it's good to see them take their already fledgling, although not hugely successful, streaming game service and then move it into a place where maybe they can get a little more traction. That's always interesting to me, but I'm trying to imagine a scenario where this actually fits what I want to do. It may fit, however, somebody like Adam. So this is perfect that we had you on, Adam.
Yeah.
Because the way this works for me is kind of silly. I've got a powerful gaming machine over here with a state-of-the-art video card, and there's really no need for me to play games I already own for an extra fee. Unless I'm traveling or have access to some, you know, decent internet somewhere where this makes sense. But in the case of heavy Mac users, they can have access to this kind of library, have access to that kind of graphical power. And if they've got a good connection, they'll be able to bring that straight into their Mac as if it was running natively. So I could see this being a benefit for you. How do you feel, though, about this whole pay for 25 hours instead of a subscription type model?
My initial reaction was that seems really pricey to me. 20 hours of gaming for $25 doesn't seem like a whole lot of whole lot of gaming when there are titles. I guess it depends on the type of gamer you are and how dedicated you are to the Mac platform. But it seems like you could take that same money over a couple months and probably build yourself a nice PC gaming rig, even if you were a Mac user,
right?
And buy your titles. And I guess having access to a larger library, maybe that's a draw for some people, you know?
Yeah. Well, Tom, I haven't heard today's DTNS yet, and I'm curious if what was the consensus there about this kind of service?
Yeah, I mean, it is expensive. If this was giving you the access to the games, then you think about it, 20 hours of gaming for $25, if you're paying $60 or $50 for a title, like forget Steam sales for the moment, that's probably in the ballpark, depending on how much you play. But when you also have to figure in that, well, you still got to buy the games from Steam or maybe buy the games through GeForce Now, it starts to become too complex. So I think they either have to bring that price down, because honestly, people could go and create an Amazon cloud instance of a PC and just install all they want and roll it themselves, and it might end up being cheaper. I'm curious if NVIDIA is going to get a lot of people using a lot of these hours. Yeah. However, I do like this idea that, hey, you just pay by the amount of time you use it. I just think the price is a little high.
Yeah, seems a little pricey, and I don't know. I don't know how this is going to go. I worry about NVIDIA. Whenever they stray too far from their core business, things get funky, and they don't always work out. And I'm glad that they're doing it. I want to see them thrive. I love their hardware. But whenever they get into these software initiatives or work on the GeForce experience in a way that kind of throws people a loop, like demanding logins and having to have, you know, certain kinds of information they never asked for before just to get new drivers. Like, that kind of stuff is just a little bit weird. This strikes me as just a little bit weird. But I'm not the target, right? I'm not the guy they're looking at. They want somebody more like Adam, or somebody who's going to game occasionally on hardware that may not be able to handle it.
Well, that's the question, right? Is this going to pull in anybody who's serious enough about gaming to want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
But doesn't have a good enough machine to buy the games and play them already.
Right.
Like, if you have a Steam library, that implies that you have a machine that is capable of buying most games. I guess maybe not all the games.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, paying $1,500 for a new gaming machine versus $25 for 20 hours, maybe that does make sense. But I'm just not sure how many people that is out there. Like, you are not going to get people who are not into video gaming to start playing video games. Are you, Stephanie? Like, does this sound like something you're like, oh, I never would have thought
before.
I go back
to the joystick and button era, which was just fine with me, and putting quarters into those standalone machines. Now, that's where it got pricey. Because you maybe only got a quarter, you play a couple of minutes of Q-Bert, and then you're gone.
That's right.
Then you die after three lives. The subscription models that all of these software companies are starting, you know, Microsoft and Adobe, it's very disturbing, because you used to just be able to buy your software, buy your game, buy your system, and they're just trying to, they're seeing what the market will bear. They're trying to get as much as they can. And you're right. I mean, it could backfire. But then, you know, do you remember when AOL used to charge by the hour?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, that's all they did for a long time. I mean, it's funny you bring that up, because Adam, Adobe's a good example. I do the Adobe subscription. It's like $45 a month. I need it. I have to have it for what I do. And as it turns out, I use a very broad swath of the products they provide in the Creative Cloud. Almost all of it gets used by me. So it feels like a steal to me. It feels like cheap to me. And I have completely gone all in on that. So they knew that there was a target like me, and we all jumped and went for it. And I have no regrets about it. I freaking love it. But that's clearly not for everybody. And trying to do that with a even a subscription that's not just paying for the hours just seems like a tall order for people.
Well, yeah, what you're getting into is something that I've talked about for a while. You're going to have your critical services, like Adobe services, if that's your business, or Microsoft services, if that's your business, and software like that. And then you have your entertainment services, so your TV subscriptions, your cable subscriptions, your games, however you're doing this. And my thing about it is we're going to get pushed, and I think people are getting pushed to this point where you're having to drop these subscription services into tiers and sort of pick and choose. And something like this NVIDIA thing, because it's not targeted at a hardcore gamer, and I'm not even so certain it's targeted at a casual gamer like me. It's somewhere weird in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And these people are already maybe paying for Netflix and Hulu and Adobe and some other thing. And now here's one other thing that, yeah, I'm kind of interested in, but am I interested in enough to throw that into my, I call it this problem of ins and outs, right? I have X amount of income coming in and I can only have so much Y of subscription revenue going out every month. And at some point that gets imbalanced and then things get really bad for me, right?
Yeah, it piles up really fast.
Yeah, yeah. Suddenly you turn around and they're hoping that most people aren't going to notice. So it almost in some ways feels like credit, a different form of a, almost like a credit card scam or something like that. It's like, yeah, just it's only a couple bucks, but it's a couple bucks here, a couple bucks there. And it's coming automatically out of your credit card. You're not really watching it. And suddenly where'd all my money go?
Yeah,
you know, mm-hmm. So there's that concern too, and I think some people are going to get hit hard by this, and I do worry about so many things going with the subscription model.
Before Tom gets to the next story, I just wanted to mention a private small anecdote from the other day. I actually considered, and this is so me, so everyone out there being, if you're worried about me, you should be. Here's my brain at work. I thought, you know what, I should sit down and actually take account of all of the little subscriptions I have, 8 to Hulu. 9 to Netflix, whatever it is, across the board, World of Warcraft, PlayStation View, like all this stuff. Make an accounting of all that so I can just look at what that number is, because I've never really looked at the whole number. I've only thought about them individually. And I am afraid to do it.
I don't blame you.
I think most people are, and that's exactly my point.
And I'm going to find out that I'm still paying for one I didn't think I was paying for. I'll find out like Xbox Live's still going, which I haven't used in 3 years. Or something like that. Like, I am actually kind of terrified to do it. I'm going to have to do it. And I think Saturday is the day. But this is, it's funny this came up since that's been on my mind. Anyway, sorry, Tom, take it away, sir.
No. We have to get to a topic that is kind of sad to talk about. Since our last regular episode of Current Geek, of course, most of you already know, Carrie Fisher passed away. And The Hollywood Reporter has sources who say that Princess Leia was set for 2 key scenes, one in episode 8 and one in episode 9. And of course, only one of those has been shot. Leia was expected to have a larger role in episode 9 than 8. So Colin Trevorrow, who is writing and directing episode 9, is set to meet with Lucasfilm's Kathleen Kennedy next week to talk through what to do. The options involve writing Leia out of the story or possibly using some kind of CGI to keep her in the story or some combination of both.
Interesting. So I have a question about this. I mean, there's been a billion stories about the Carrie Fisher thing. I think it's incredibly sad. As a side note, as a father of 2 daughters growing up, she provided the kind of pop culture heroine that I really liked them seeing and emulating. And it really gave them a princess to get behind in a way that I, as a dad, could be proud of. I don't know. There's just something about her.
Absolutely.
So there was that level of it. There was the personal level of there's another human being who's gone, who had a big impact on everybody. There's all these things. And so they all add up to be a really sad thing. But then you start thinking, well, what are they going to do? Like, we've got a Philip Seymour Hoffman thing happening here where we've got a third movie and we don't know what they're going to do. And there's now in these people's contracts, all kinds of, well, if I die, you can use my likeness, but this much money comes out of the production or whatever. That's pretty much true across the board now. So I don't even know where to start. So as our resident actress and performer, Stephanie, what's your take on this whole thing?
You know, I had a lot of really strong thoughts about the General Tarkin CGI work. It's a little awkward, you know, and actually I just watched today, there was a Nightline interview with John Knoll from ILM. And he was comparing it to when they had the Fred Astaire commercial with the Dirt Devil where they, you know, painted in a Dirt Devil over the coat rack. Fred Astaire's dancing with a Dirt Devil.
Oh, right.
I don't think that's the same thing because they never changed Fred Astaire's essential performance. They kept his performance. They just implied that he would have endorsed this vacuum cleaner. When you create a performance from an actor who's no longer with us based on a previous performance, what you think he would do, I'm not really on board with that. And a lot of actors are going to have to be dealing with this now. You know, you're right. I think in the new contracts, there are these clauses. We not only own your likeness, we can do whatever we want with it. You know, Peter Cushing had no idea when he signed on for a small role in a sci-fi movie in the 70s that it wasn't just going to be a blockbuster, it was going to be a cultural juggernaut. And he never could have imagined that someone would then, 20 years after his passing, put words in his mouth and try to fool fans into thinking, no, this is the same guy playing the same role.
Yeah.
We have a situation, when Jim Henson died and Steve Whitmire took over Kermit, he wasn't trying to pretend that this was Jim Henson playing Kermit. It was we care very much about the character integrity, but we never tried to fool anyone into thinking, no, kids, this is Jim. Mm. Our job is to make you forget that there's anyone under there anyway.
Yeah, I should say this real quick, because this sort of, I think this supports where you're coming from. I was convinced when I saw the movie, I went, obviously that's CGI Tarkin. No one's going to fall for this. But I was wrong. I have three kids.
It was the real one.
My 3-year old or my 3-year old, my 19 year old says to me after the movie, I can't believe he's still alive. He looks so good. And I said, oh my gosh, there is a generation who doesn't know that Grand Moff Tarkin is no more, right?
So, do you think that they're just used to that CG look? Because I thought it looked really cartoony. Maybe that's just me.
Well, part of it, I think we all come, and anybody can correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I feel like we, those of us who grew up and were young when Star Wars was a thing and new, and we saw that actor, we knew years later that he had passed on, and not that long after Star Wars, actually. So when Peter Cushing was out of the picture, we just have that in our head that he can't be real. So no matter what they showed us, we would have been in a little bit of uncanny valley. But my daughter, who's pretty perceptive about this stuff, generally speaking, doesn't have any frame of reference for that, because he's not on his radar. She also thought it was the same Mon Mothma lady.
Oh, right.
Even though she did a heck of a job looking like her. She was like, man, how does she stay so young?
Episode 3, just not the same one from Return of the Jedi.
Correct. So there's there's some of that crossover, but also the sense of these people aren't aging. How weird is this? And that took over for her, and she had no idea. And I was genuinely surprised. So maybe the fooling worked.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I think that this younger generation might be so used to seeing that level of CG in their movies. And, I still feel like it's uncanny valley, or there's something a little off about it. And I thought that they overacted him a little bit. Now, maybe it's just me. Mm. But I feel like Peter Cushing was a better actor than they made him. And I'm sure that there are going to be people who disagree. This is just my opinion. When I saw it, I just thought, I think they're overdoing it a little bit. It just got a little bigger than... Because they can change... the height of an eyebrow lift.
Right. That's true.
The issue is that it's not Peter Cushing. Mm-hmm. And yet we're trying to make it look like it was Peter Cushing, and it can never be Peter Cushing. So it's never going to be the same, and possibly not as good, because Peter Cushing was
really
good.
Look at how much
they
tried to fool. I mean, they didn't pretend. They could have cast another actor who looked like him.
Mm-hmm. And then
they could have done a million things.
It would have been even more different.
Right.
But in a different way. That at least you would have said, well, I know it's a different actor, so I'm not going to be as put off by it. There's not going to be the uncanny valley, because it's an actual human being, right?
Right. Well, I mean, with Dumbledore, they recast Dumbledore, and there wasn't a problem with that.
Right, right.
Which, yeah.
I think the most fascinating thing about it is your Kermit example, though, because, yes, from the Peter Cushing side, everything you're saying, I 100% agree with. From the Tarkin side, if we were just to say, forget there's humans behind it, I want Tarkin to look the same and be as close to the same. And so your Kermit example is something I had never even thought of before in relation to this, which is there's a place where you don't need to CGI Kermit. He's still the same Muppet, but you don't see the actor behind it. So it's not going to jar you as long as the voice is close. And like you say, you don't have to pretend that's Jim Henson there. The problem is that it's a human person up in front of you, so you can see the difference. If the technology ever gets to the point where you can't tell the difference, does that change your opinion at all?
Yeah.
Well, here's the other thing, and then we'll go back to the Muppet example. Look at Fozzie Bear. So the first season of The Muppet Show, it was a very different Fozzie Bear. The puppet looked different. What Frank was doing with him was different. It was more akin to what Dan Castellaneta was doing the first season Homer. Mm-hmm. Fozzie Bear sounded different. And as the seasons went on, Frank was evolving in that character and learning new things about him and finding out new things about him. So when Eric started doing Fozzie, you know, you always have that argument. Well, which Fozzie am I imitating? I just started doing Prairie Dawn because Fran Brill retired a couple of years ago. And what she did in the 70s as Prairie Dawn and what she did, you know, 2 years ago as Prairie Dawn is very different. Mm-hmm. So where do you, you know, start from? Well, what Peter Cushing might have done with Tarkin had he lived to be 100 and whatever might have been different than what the animators thought, because see what you were getting with a creation of his performance was an imitation of something from 1977.
Sure.
You weren't getting what could have evolved over time. And so getting back to Carrie Fisher, what she was doing in Force Awakens was obviously going to be different than what she did in the first three movies, because she's aged, she's matured, this is a different, Leia is in a different place in her life. You can't make it so much about, we think we know what she would do based on what she did before, because any actor worth his or her salt is going to want to make it richer and deeper and evolve and learn and grow from it.
Sure. I mean, and life happens in the lives of these characters. In the case of Carrie Fisher's character, a lot of time has gone by. 30-something years has gone by. But in the case of Cushing, they're trying to represent him at the time that would have been the same as episode four. This all happened prior to episode four. In Rogue One. Now, all of that being said,
but his role was smaller.
Oh no, I totally agree. But it was also I totally agree. But here's what I would say. I think we're heading toward a time. I don't know when this is going to be. This is a little predicty right now.
Yeah.
But at some time, we're going to look at these CGI characters, and I want to hear you weigh in on this too, Adam. We're going to look at these CGI characters, kind of the way I look at Kermit or Fozzie or whoever, and say, Jim Henson died. It was awful, tragic, and way too soon. But the character lives on, and there's clearly love and intent behind that to make him the best Kermit he can be, even though I can tell with my adult ears that's not the same voice as Kermit originally was for me. And who knows how Jim Henson would sound now. But I think there is a generation of people whose puppets are made of pixels and polygons. I hope that the true art of puppetry never dies. But my point is...
Well, think of Boz Kanata. Think of Rocket Raccoon, right?
Right.
What you're saying is humans can start to become a suit. Like someone's look becomes a CGI suit that someone else can put on and act with.
Yeah, that's
see,
true.
See, and that's kind of sad to me, because when you think about how individual someone like Carrie Fisher is, how unique, how do you begin to say, even as an actor who's going to be cast in that role, how do you say, I'm going to put on my Carrie Fisher suit?
Yeah, I don't think they do it. I don't think they do it.
No.
I think they're going to do something else. I don't know if they recast. I don't know if they just... The hard part is writing her off in the story is a really rough thing to do.
Well, is it? Is it, though? I mean, don't they sort of? I don't know what the storyline is, and maybe this is the problem. I don't know what the storyline of the next two movies are or how those are woven together.
You don't?
Right?
You have a podcast. You should know everything.
She's a military general. It seems like very easy to have, she was in a battle, she died, and it'd be great if they could even maybe do a little homage scene, they send her off in honor. That would be awesome to see at the beginning of the first movie.
Take, in the story.
You know, a minute and a half, it wouldn't take long to do the scene, and in steps the new general, and you introduce a new character. I mean, it seems pretty... Again, I don't know what the storyline is and how it's already woven. They've already shot one scene, so they might have to go back and change a lot of things, which, you know, can affect production. But it seems to me they would have an easy way of writing
it
out.
I think the biggest problems is this was going to be a family story. And the big disruption to the family happened in episode 7 already. And you can't go back and undo that. And now you've got another disruption to the family that you didn't plan on.
Yeah.
But you might have the door open to a really interesting creative another creative door opening. Yeah. What does that mean for Kylo Ren to lose his mother?
Yeah.
You know, this is a journey that maybe they didn't expect and maybe they didn't want, but that's why you're a creative storyteller.
That's why I'm so curious. That's the most curious thing for me is not what will it do to episode 9. I think they may consider doing things to episode 8.
Episode 8. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And by that I mean they could shoot all, I mean they do this stuff last second anyway all the time. Rogue One had a million reshoots before it was able to come out. And a lot of it barely was represented in trailers or anything. So it's entirely possible they go back and they tack on some pretty serious heavy stuff at the end of this thing as a middle act, which oftentimes in the Star Wars universe is your heavy act.
Right.
Clone Wars not included. That was a terrible movie. But you know what I mean? Like Empire Strikes Back, there's a darkness. There's hard things going on. I don't know that that would fill out a place here.
Was that an ending? I mean, think about it. When that movie came out.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. This is the end?
Yeah. It's really intense. So I don't know. But I feel like it's 8 where we're going to find out what they plan to do and that 9 won't feature a scene. I don't think if it is, it'll be some sort of, I don't know, used in a sort of not flashback way. But you know what I mean? Like they could do a lot with it. But I think them trying to cram changes after 8 is dangerous. I think 8 needs to be altered to better represent the loss. Just my thinking.
Well, I don't envy Colin Trevorrow and Kathleen Kennedy in that.
And I don't envy poor Billy Lord, who's going to ultimately be the one that might have to make this decision.
Right.
On behalf of her mother, you know, that poor baby. Yeah. I can't fathom.
Mother and grandmother. At the same time.
In 2 days, what she must be going through is insane. And then to have this pressure on her and, of course, to have the fan pressure on her. Carrie Fisher went through a lot in her life. And there was a time when maybe Carrie Fisher, the actress, wasn't beloved for whatever silly, stupid Hollywood reason that might have been. But Princess Leia was always beloved.
Yeah.
And those are hard shoes to fill. And I'm sure that fans will probably be putting pressure on this poor girl saying, you can't deny us our Leia. And other people will be putting pressure on her saying, you can't do this to your mother. And I wouldn't.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Boy,
man.
That poor girl. I just hope that people, everyone, Hollywood fans, just maybe put themselves in her shoes for just a moment and just think about what she's going through and maybe, you know, just give her a little space and time and not pressure her to make this. Because ultimately it does come down to the family's wishes, the family permission. It's going to be up to her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they want to proceed with a CGI.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's all protect Mark Hamill. All right.
For the love of all that's holy.
This is very related to what we were just talking about. The trailer for Star Wars Rebels, the Disney XD show, just came out and shows an Alec Guinness-like Obi-Wan Kenobi, and it's an animated show if you don't realize that, meeting Darth Maul again. Rebels will also see an appearance by Saw Gerrera. The older Kenobi is voiced by Steven Stanton, who, by the way, voiced old Ben Kenobi and Maul in the video game Battlefront 2. And wow, he really sounds like Alec Guinness. So this is a similar problem, obviously not as heart-wrenching because it has been many years since Alec Guinness left us, but in a different situation, again, because it's entirely animated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's so funny how we look at it differently. I mean, we don't want to rehash the same conversation about the differences, but I feel like this is a good example of where we're okay with it, at least for now. And it may change down the road when these characters begin to be more than just computer, aberrations of some animator, where they become something more controllable by performers and others. And it's not so much the tech and it's more about the character and who knows. But I, for one, am thrilled to see this in Rebels. I think this sounds awesome. And also Darth Maul was one of the greatest villains in the history of Star Wars. The fact that they've figured out how to get him back in lots of ways. I don't want to spoil things, but if you've seen both Rebels and the Clone Wars cartoon, you know that he's made an appearance. If you think his last moments on various planets was that one time, you'd be wrong. But yeah, big fan of, let's just say, the upper half of Darth Maul. I don't want to say too much.
The better half of Darth Maul.
Well, he got cut in half, didn't he? He got sliced in half in episode one.
In episode one, he gets sliced.
Yes,
in half.
He did.
That was a bummer.
Spoiler alert! If you haven't seen The Phantom Menace,
but the makeup covers that seam really well.
Yeah, oh yeah, they did a good job. Well, because that's why lightsabers are good for kids' movies, because they cauterize everything, right? So you don't have any blood or anything.
Foundation
right
over that, you're fine.
Yeah,
but if they cut along the black and red lines just so, it disguises it very nicely.
You know, you can't even
change the angle of one of his My husband used to do an imitation of Darth Maul putting makeup on in the morning.
Oh, my gosh.
Just really carefully with the black line and putting the red on.
Adam, have you seen that show, by the way? Sorry. Is that something you've seen? Have you watched Rebels at all, Adam?
No, I haven't.
You should. You like Star Wars.
I'm still catching up on Clone Wars.
Just asking that so you can believe.
I'm still catching up on Clone Wars, and we're doing the whole order thing. I'm been doing it with my younger daughter, so we've been going in order, Clone Wars, but it's slow going.
And dive right. You can dive right in after that for sure. I mean,
it kind of carries it on.
Yeah, yeah. You're gonna love
it. I don't have cable either, so I don't know if I even have access to that stuff yet. So
I'm trying to think where
if
that's
it's not on streaming. Then I don't have access to it.
Isn't some of it streaming on like season one on Netflix, Tom? Or am I thinking that wrong? Maybe that got pulled.
I can't remember which service has it, but yeah, it is available on one of the streaming services. And of course, if you do Sling TV or PlayStation View, you can get back seasons on demand through those, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's where I'm watching it. So good stuff.
Speaking of, Amazon has renewed its show, The Man in the High Castle, for a third season. And Eric Overmyer, who ran Bosch for Amazon, will serve as showrunner and executive producer.
Oh, well, that's good. I'm all for Man in the High Castle. I still haven't consumed season two. Season one is beloved by me. It was my favorite series that year. Very close with Fargo season two in terms of how much I loved it. But, I don't know why I've been slow to get into two. It's that thing, Tom, I always talk about where, because I know it's produced by, paid for, and therefore will never leave Amazon streaming, I know it's just always going to be there.
Yeah. I hear you.
Yeah. So that's kind of weird, but, you guys fans of that show? Anybody seen Man in the High Castle?
Another reason I haven't watched it is the same thing you just said, Scott.
Yeah.
I have too much content and not enough time, and that one's going to be there when I'm ready for it. So, yeah. Sorry.
Exactly the same story here. Although, did I hear correctly? Is Stephen Root involved with the season three?
There is something with Stephen Root. I don't know what it is. But I love Stephen Root. He's great.
Yeah, me too. He's one of my favorite actors in the world. And that might be enough for me to get on that horse right away and catch up.
For those who don't know, Stephen Root, the stapler guy in Office Space. He is also the voice
of News Radio.
We could go way back.
Any Coen Brothers movie. Where art thou?
That's right. He's the one that sent that some mighty fine picking and a singing, he says. And Oh Brother Where Art Thou. He's also the voice of Bill Dotrieve on King of the Hill. If you watch Justified, he was this really great judge. The guy is everywhere and all places at once, and he is amazing. So whatever his role is, I'm pretty stoked about that.
Yeah, I follow him wherever he would go.
Nice.
Come for the Stephen Root, stay for the Philip K. Dick-inspired Ridley Scott story. What can go wrong? I mean, it's got everything, folks. There's no reason not to watch the show.
Sure.
I am a huge fan. It's my favorite book of all time. So I was in from the beginning on this, but I've heard from people who didn't know the book that the second season is better than the first season. And people are actually enjoying it even more, which is good news for the team because Frank Spotnitz left halfway through the second season and they were able to keep going, keep their momentum. And it's being very well received.
It's always concerning when your showrunner leaves, but, you know, sometimes that stuff works out, and it seems like it has in this case, so that's good.
Let's finish up with one more CES story. Ford is partnering with Amazon to bring Amazon Voice Services, and for Stephanie and Adam, we make a point of saying Amazon Voice Services instead of the name of the voice service so we don't set off people's Amazon Echoes. if you're wondering, like, why aren't they just calling her by her name? The Amazon is bringing that to cars. Use cases include telling the car to open the garage door, turn on the lights before you get home, play some audiobooks and music in your car. You can even do things like remotely start and stop the engine from your Amazon Echo, or lock and unlock the doors, check the fuel level, etc. Those auto-related features like locking and unlocking and starting the engine will come first to the Ford Focus Electric, the Fusion Energy, and the C-Max Energy models. And the broader set of commands for things like audiobooks and lights and garage doors coming to cars with Ford Sync 3 this summer. And Ford isn't the only one doing this sort of thing. GM is using IBM's Watson now as part of its OnStar system. And Daimler's Mercedes will be using Google Assistant in its cars.
So, Adam, you're going to, how do you feel about this? It's all about voice assistants now. You got Siri over there. You got OK Google. Oh, sorry, everybody, over there. And this and the Amazon thing over here. I forgot to not say one
voice
of those
services.
Yeah.
We changed it to what do we use? Just Jeff. Okay, Sergey, and hey Tim.
Just say Siri and it's fine. You can just say Google Assistant and it's fine. But with Amazon, it was a little trickier.
Yeah, a little harder.
But how do I feel about, I just got one of those devices in my house over the holidays. It was a gift and we're having kind of a mixed bag with it. What I'm a little more concerned about, and I'm not even in this, you know, conspiracy camp or anything like that, but I noticed at CES, kind of going back to CES, like Amazon is everywhere. That technology is going into children's toys, into refrigerators, toasters, cars, like, and that does get a little bit like creepy. Like that the fact that Amazon's going to have a mic every place where I am going to be, you know, it does in the back of your mind, you're going like,
Uncle Jeff is listening.
Yeah. Like, okay, it's starting to feel a little Orwellian at that point.
Well, in your car especially, right? Like, because if you're in your car and I don't know, the car is like a place where, you know, a guy can get in his truck and he can fart and then he can he can go get a burger and then he can drop his keys.
In your trucks.
And he can drop an F-bomb because he dropped his keys and he's just having the worst day. And now something can hear you doing it all. And
you
maybe
rode the truck, have you, Scott?
No, not really. I'm going with pure stereotype here. Stephanie, your thoughts on cars being driven by a certain unnamed Amazon employee?
Well, you know, I'm just having visions of 2001. Yeah, I can't turn that way now, Dave. It will. You know, my husband was trying to use just having fun earlier this evening. This evening with texting with the Apple voice assistant and asking her to send me texts. And of course they were wrong. He said, you know, tell her I love her. And I'd get a text saying I love her. And I texted back her who, you know, it's little differences like that. You know, let's forget the hackability. I had a situation today where I'm on my banking site and the server went down temporarily. Now, I wasn't doing anything major, but it was just enough to think. And I had actually read the Post article about CES and the cars. And I thought, boy, it's inconvenient when you're trying to balance your checking account. If you're driving on the highway and your server in your car crashes, I mean, cars are freaking magic now as it is. At what point do you need the car to say hello to you? Like, how needy have we become that you need the car to tell you what you're thinking or what you need or to anticipate? Like, what was one of the things in the story saying it would tap you on the shoulder if it sensed you weren't paying attention? Now,
well, Tom and I talk about this all the time. The idea that autonomous cars are going to scare people, and this isn't even about autonomous cars at this stage. At this stage, it's about turn on the heater, change the station on the radio. Like, we're talking about some stuff that's a little more rudimentary. But you're not wrong that this is where we're heading. We're heading to a place where we talk to the car and it takes us where we want to go. And there's so much statistically that shows already, even with the base tests they have now, that we are going to wreck less, die less, and have way less problems than we ever do with people behind the wheel. Yet there's still this thing. There's still that little thing in the back of the minds of anybody born before 1985 where we just are like, oh, but it's a machine. I don't know if I trust this machine. And Tom, I don't know how we get away from it. It just keeps coming up. It's never going to be a thing.
My fun game is when we start thinking this way, and I'm not saying that I'm not also thinking exactly the same way as Stephanie and everybody else, is to imagine what my grandpa, who was born in the late 1800s, used to say about cars and the fact that, like, well, if you're too lazy to take care of a horse, how lazy are you? And we're going to have small explosions. You know, this is just going to cause fires, and it's dangerous. Dangerous, and you can't trust a machine will break down, a horse won't. And it's like, well, those are all really good points, Grandpa.
I'm not a Luddite. But
I'm not saying you are. But I feel
enough
like
people have their phone bricked. Now again, if your phone is bricked, or you drop your phone in the toilet, I suppose you can live without it for a day.
Yeah.
But if you're relying on your car and your car gets bricked in the middle of a trip,
this is where I was going with that. Is back in the day when the cars were just starting to replace horses, they broke down all the time. They smoked and they were horrible. But we got eventually good enough that we created reliable cars that work most of the time. And we're in that early awkward stage. We're like, yeah, computers crash all the time. And like, we need to make sure we get this right. So it'll be a while. And the head of Toyota actually said this at CES. He's like, look, folks, autonomous cars are a long way off. Mm-hmm. That we can do lots of cool tricks for demos, but actually having them reliably able to drive people around is a long way.
I also think they're being more careful this time around, just to sort of finish this topic. I don't think they, you know, this, I've said this on this very show before, if we didn't have automobiles up to this point, it's a weird scenario, but go with me here. And suddenly they were introduced and we said, this is how we're getting around. Here's a brand new freeway we built. Go. What's the speed limit? 65 miles an hour. Nobody would, the whole society would freak out. Like, what are you asking us to do? So it's partly the technology and the machinery and all that stuff getting better, but it's also us getting better at harnessing it. And I feel like now's the time where they will be ultra crazy about tests. And this is never going to be like idea to market the way it was for Ford or anybody else who brought out the first cars. This is going to be like a long, arduous, slow, limited market process that's going to take us a decade or more before we're seeing this as any sort of regularity.
But wouldn't it be more interesting if they put all that energy that they're putting into autonomous vehicles into, say, solar-powered battery-run vehicles, into something that was more fuel efficient or that had zero emissions? Mm. You know, it would be great if all this energy that was being put into your car being able to predict where you want to go and to create something that's, you know, lighter.
I have some good news. They are. Yeah. I mean, they're also putting a ton of energy into electric cars.
Yeah.
In fact, all of the demos of autonomous cars at CES were electric cars.
Yeah. My thinking is when autonomous cars are a thing that you, Stephanie, and I and others are going, okay, maybe it's time to look into this, or buying a service, because by then it may be another rental that Adam doesn't want to pay for every month. But by the time we're there, the good news is they're all going to be electrics. It doesn't really solve the fact that electricity is still a power source that we have to get with coal and other crappy ways.
I mean, that needs to be solved, but there's some steps being taken. Tesla superchargers are solar powered. That's how they collect the power that they then are able to give to the cars. And they just launched the Gigafactory in Nevada that's creating the Powerwall batteries so that solar panels can store energy more efficiently. So, you know, hopefully we keep making progress that way too.
Yeah, we seem to be getting there. I hope so. I hope at the end of all this, it's all solar powered, that we suck the sun dry. That's the goal. Screw you, son.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm just Why are we not worried about that?
Yeah, like the Death Star did.
The Death Star that was what is that thing called?
Star Killer Base. Yeah, right. Suck the sun dry. Wow, what a dumb and awesome thing that was. So cool. Anyway, we should thank our subredditors for submitting so many great stories this week. Tom, who are some of the folks that contributed?
Yeah, big thanks to Surprise Truck. I always have to read his name like that because that's what it sounds like to me. Jeff Rose, JMZ668, and Captain Kipper all submitted stories we used on the show today. Thank you, folks. Go submit and vote at currentgeek.reddit.com.
Real quick, I want to talk about a sponsor whom I just benefited from today. Tom and I both got brand new HelloFresh kits. They sent us three meals. And I'm a huge fan of HelloFresh, have been for a long time. They did some ads back in the day on TMS, which is where I was first introduced to them. And I'm a terrible cook. I'm the worst. Tom can actually make food and do things and has ideas. I, unlike him, am terrible and make terrible choices when I cook things. So how nice it is to get something with all the ingredients, all the fresh stuff that I need to make it, all the right instructions, all the low-calorie counts I want, whatever it is I'm looking for, I get it from HelloFresh. They're a meal kit delivery service making cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Tom, do you have an anecdote about this week's fine food? Because I really liked it. It was really good.
Yeah, man. It kind of saved my holiday break because we were traveling for Christmas, and then we got back and I had been to the grocery store and we had these meals in the fridge. All you need is the cooking oil, the salt and pepper, and then it just tells you what to do. Everything's measured out. And the cool part for me is that you make this meal and then you have the recipe and you know how to make it. So it actually can kind of teach you to cook, Scott.
Yeah, and I'm terrible at that, so I need all the help I can get. Each week, HelloFresh creates delicious new recipes with step-by-step instructions. And you just follow them. The recipes are set up so anybody can make a delicious and nutritious home-cooked meal in 30 minutes or less, whether you usually cook for yourself or are not so comfortable doing it. And that would be me. HelloFresh sources the freshest ingredients. The exact quantities are sent to you and there is zero food waste. Everything is delivered to your doorstep in a special insulated box. And we've teamed up with them. They're offering everyone in our audience $35 off. That is actually a significant amount of HelloFresh. Go to HelloFresh.com and get your first week of deliveries for free, basically, with that price. $35 off at HelloFresh.com. You just have to use the offer code CURRENTGEEK35, you know, for the 35% off. That's how that math works. CURRENTGEEK35. And we really enjoy it. I know you guys will as well. So do go check it out. It's time for the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right, time for the pop quiz. Where's the music? I don't know. Oh, there it is. All right. Hey, look at that. The music, everybody. This is a chance for us to test our guests in the areas of their expertise. And I have questions to ask them. When they get their answers correctly, you're going to hear this sound. Oh, it's not working. Why? There it is. And if you get it wrong, you'll hear this. Whoop, that's not going either. There we go. There we go. That's what it'll sound like if they get the question wrong. All the technology's working out great today.
Every time Scott will say, that's not working, and then play it.
I don't know why it's not working. So we're going to start today with Stephanie, since you're new to this, and I'm going to tell you your topic. Your topic is Sesame Street trivia.
All right.
Seems like an area you should have lots to do. Yeah.
Oh, I better not screw this up. I might get fired.
No
all right.
And I used to work for Pizza Hut, and I would fail a Pizza Hut trivia. So I'm not, you know, like.
By the way, my favorite Muppets were those ones that the aliens that talked on the phone, and they were always looking for.
Oh
a
yeah,
book.
Yep.
Yeah, uh-huh. I miss them. Why can't they come back? Can we get those guys back?
They've come back once in a while. They're in Elmo the Musical. They've shown up every now and then.
All right. I'm going to have to go dig through
maybe
some.
You have to watch Sesame Street to see them.
So. Hey, I got HBO now. I can watch it. I can actually watch my favorite kids program.
You know, apparently those were made out of chenille hats.
Oh, really?
That one of our builders, I believe it was. I don't remember who it was. But they were selling on the streets in New York. And they
amazing.
Unraveled them.
Yeah.
And that's where they got the tentacles for the aliens, that for the Yip Yips.
That is amazing.
That explains so much.
Are they called the Yip Yips?
I've heard Martians. I've heard Yip Yips.
Oh, my gosh.
I think we call them Yip Yips.
This is the greatest day of my life. All right. here's your first question. What year did Sesame Street first air?
1969.
You are correct. The year I was born and Tom was born. Adam, when were you born? What year were you born?
71.
Oh.
You're such a kid.
We're the same age. When in 71?
July 26th.
Oh, December 7th. So,
nice.
Okay.
You're older than her. Well done.
By a little bit.
Sesame Street recently moved to HBO. How many months are episodes exclusive to HBO before going to PBS?
Wait a minute. How many? Wait, what are you talking about? In total?
Yeah,
or?
No, so like if there's a new episode that goes to HBO,
yeah.
Those episodes are exclusive
to PBS 9 months later.
Oh, well, hold on. That's so fast. There. Okay, you nailed it. Well done.
Plus a half point confusing question.
All right. Oh, yeah. I forgot to tell about Tom's scoring. He's scoring the whole time, and he'll give you bonuses occasionally. And sometimes he'll dock you, so you got to watch out.
Okay.
What actor plays Big Bird in the Sesame Street as well as the Big Bird movies?
Well, that would be Carol Spinney, the great Carol Spinney.
Yeah, that documentary, I Am Big Bird,
so isn't that great?
Good. As you can tell, I might be in love with Muppets and Sesame Street because I'll watch all of it. It's so good.
If you see that, it's totally a reflection of him. Nothing is fake. Nothing is false. That's him and Debbie all over. They are a wonderful, wonderful couple.
Yeah. If
and
you, ever wanna...
you can see the top of my head in like two shots.
Oh,
but
no
just
way.
The top of my head, not my face.
I'll have to watch for it. If you ever want to hear the guy who plays Big Bird drop the F-bomb, it's a great opportunity to do it in that movie. what color was Oscar the Grouch originally in his first season of Sesame Street?
Orange.
She knows all this stuff because why wouldn't she? This is
well. Also, my husband is president of the Jim Henson Legacy.
Oh,
so we've actually edited a bunch of reels and compilations for places like the Museum of the Moving Image in Queens and the Center for Puppetry Arts. So we have a lot of archival footage we go through as well.
You guys
and
are,
we're fans.
And you're into
you know
it, sure.
We're huge fans.
Here's your final question. We'll see how you do with this one. Actually, there's this and then a bonus question. We've never had a bonus one with Tom, so I'm not sure how to handle this. But here it comes. As of now, how many seasons are there in Sesame Street?
Well, I know we're shooting season 48 right now, and season 47 premieres this month.
You are correct. So 46 and 47 being premiering.
Half point extra information bonus, like that.
Nice. Final question. This is a bonus one. How many episodes are there? If you don't get this wrong, it will not ding you, unless Tom decides otherwise with his scoring.
Well, you know, it's interesting because they started changing the way the episodes were numbered in season 43. They used to just chronologically number them. Then they started doing it the way television shows do. So the third episode in season 43 would be 4303, when in fact, I think it was 4280 something.
Oh.
Yeah, so I don't know whether you're going by episode numbers that you see on air.
Yeah, I have no idea.
If you're going by that, my guess is that we're around... If I had to guess, I'd say it was 4,500.
You are so close. According to this, and I don't have the data because the person who writes these questions didn't give it to me, but I show 4,384.
Tom,
that's dang close. I don't know.
No, that makes sense anyway. Because we've been doing fewer and fewer of them every year.
Right. Plus, as a bonus question, it doesn't really count, right, Tom?
Yeah.
All right.
You did really well.
You did really freaking well.
Yeah, I'm going to get annihilated.
Adam, yours is in your area of expertise, and I think I agree with the assumption that you are going to know a lot about the history of the Mac OS. Okay?
Maybe. We'll see.
It's a big, sweet maybe. Yeah. That is now called Mac OS. Used to be OS X.
Before that, Mac OS.
There you go. That's true. That's a nice little Mac OS sandwich, a little weird something in the middle. Mac OS trivia. Let's start with this one. What was the code name for Mac System 7?
God. I'm not going to know.
I can give you a theory. Oh, I just did. I just gave him a theory.
I don't know anything before the cat code names, unfortunately. So I'm going to have to.
You're going to pass?
Take on that.
All right. It is Big Bang. I almost gave it away when I said theory. I was going to say I'm going to give you a hint, but I said I'll give you a theory.
He answered correctly that he did not know any of the code names before the cats. So get the point.
Well done. Next question. Mac OS X liked to use cats for their OS names for a while there anyway.
Yes,
how many versions of OS X were named for cats?
That would have gone through Mountain Lion. So that was 10.9?
9 total? Or 10.9?
How many total? So 9.
Oh, you nailed it. Well done. I knew that's what you meant, so that's why I wanted to clarify. well done. That would have been cheetah, puma, jaguar, panther, tiger, leopard, snow leopard, lion, and mountain lion before they went to stupid mountain stuff. All right.
Then snow mountain lion.
Yeah.
Then snow jaguar lion.
Then panther, tiger, leopard man. And then they changed the whole idea. All right. What year was Mac OS 8 released?
Asking me all the old OS ones.
It's an important year. It's an important year. I can say that much.
Aren't they all?
I don't know.
Take a wild guess.
97?
Oh, I mean, whoa. Hold on. That is correct. I hovered over the buzz because I thought for sure you'd get
so
it wrong.
I was so convinced by his groaning that he was going to get it wrong.
I remembered I was working at an ad agency then, so I was just kind of going off my work history because I did IT for them. So I remember installing all that stuff.
Oh my gosh, that's too funny. I don't know why.
Lucked out.
I was so sure you're going to get it wrong. I had the wrong thing. All right. Well done. That's good. Second to last question. What years did Apple use their Mac OS titled Classic?
Oh, Mac OS Classic. Wait, say that question again.
From what year to what year did Apple use their Mac OS called Classic? In other words, when was the Classic Mac OS still in production? What years was that, or would that have been?
I don't know that I completely understand it. I'm assuming
I think they mean the original Mac.
The classic, when they had the classic mode, like when they were transitioning
to
10.
When they had the old, like, original Mac OS that they kept updating all the way through when?
2000 to 2004, I don't know.
You're so close. Like, I'm going to say kind of that and kind of that. It's 1984 when it debuted, and they stopped using it in 9. In 2001. So I technically
I just didn't really understand the question.
Yeah. Sorry. I think you just give him that one.
Yeah, he gets a point because that was not clear.
That's a terrible question, Mike. Just kidding. We love you. Keep making these. All right. Final question. What version number was the final release of System 7? I'm sure you know this.
The final release. You just told me this.
Oh, did I?
Right?
I might have.
Right? Wasn't that the earlier question?
Maybe. No. Oh, I said, what was the code name for Mac System 7? Big Bang.
Oh.
What was the final release? And this is a number.
Final
so
release of System 7.
It's a. I'll give you a hint. It's a number dot number dot number. 7 dot number dot number.
Oh, he wants like the version number.
Yeah.
I don't know. 7.5.6. I have no idea.
It is 7.6.1. But I don't know why you or anyone in their right mind
like
would know that.
Like 2/3 of a point for getting two of the numbers out of the three.
I probably could have given you Mac OS 6 because that was the last one. It's like 6.09 because that was the latest my Mac Plus would run.
Oh, all right. Now that would have, you probably still would have gotten the 3/4 of a point from Tom.
Anyway.
Those are your answers. Well done, both. Yep. Tom, how'd they do?
Adam finished up with 4.67 and Stephanie with 6.
Yay, 6. Well done, everybody.
I didn't do as bad as I thought I would.
No, you did.
Good.
Dude, you did great.
I'm proud of myself.
Yeah, I was impressed.
Yeah, I'm impressed. I don't know any of that stuff. You had us and I pretend like I know technology. Look how little I know. All right, we got one last thing to do. We'll rip through it real quick. It's called Forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
I'd like to make a prediction, and it's this. By the way, that's what this whole segment is. We make a forecast. It's spelled F-O-U-R, like forecast. We will have one day devices that we can plug into our brains once a day, and it will artificially do everything we need sleep for in about an instant. Just boom. All the rest you need, all the rejuvenation of cells in your brain, all the reasons you need sleep as a human on this planet will happen in a flash because it'll all happen because this machine is capable of the technology.
So we'll figure out, because we don't really know why we sleep,
right,
to be honest, but right, we'll figure that out and then simulate it.
Yeah, and we know some of the benefits of sleep. We don't know why we need those benefits necessarily, or if they're a side product of other reasons. So you're right. The brain science on this is loose at best, but we'll get to a place where we'll figure that out and we'll have some sort of technology. And I'm saying like 100 years from now, I'm not talking 10 years or even anywhere near. I'm saying a long ways off. We will be at the point in biotech where we can say, oh, I'm getting a little tired. It's time for my daily 8 hours or whatever. You plug it in and you get 8 hours worth of rest in a single bzzz. And then you're good for the rest of the time. Now, this has far-reaching society issues. Like, if there is suddenly no reason to go to sleep, then no city sleeps. Nowhere sleeps ever again. Businesses run 24/7. Like, suddenly the world is a place where nighttime means nothing in terms of your ability to sleep. Jet lag means nothing. Travel, stuff like that means nothing. You're alert all the time. Part of me thinks that'll be a war dystopia. And part of me thinks that it sounds kind of nice. But I think that we're going to get to a place where that will become a thing. And thank you, Black Mirror, for inspiring this idea. Anybody have any thoughts or comments? Yes.
Won't people miss pillows?
Well,
I mean, there's going to be some massive pillow nostalgia, right?
Well, see, that's one of the things. Like, I'm sure there's a whole list of these things, like alarm clocks. There, that goes away.
Lattice sheets.
Yeah.
Snuggling.
Snuggling, yes. Watching TV in bed before you go to sleep, reading in bed.
Well, that makes me think, okay, so we'll have all the time in the world to sit on our sofas and watch stuff.
To lay down on our bed, crawl
you know, to relax.
But if you're never tired, you will be so much, I mean, in theory, you would be so much more productive, maybe.
Well, we thought we would be more productive when we had the electric washing machine or when we would, you know, no longer have to dig to go to the river to get our water.
Once my grandpa gave up his horse. He thought he was going to be so much more productive.
We thought we were going to get so much done on laundry day. Yeah. And we have more time. It's just what we choose to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what we choose to do with it is consume content.
Well, I can tell you, as somebody who, you know, does this podcasting thing full time, and Tom does, and so does Adam, this feeling of when you suddenly do it for yourself and now there's a new block of time that you didn't used to have.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You don't go, oh, thank goodness I've got that extra block of time. I can use it to meditate or spend time just looking. You feel it immediately. You're like, I can do 8 more shows and I can put up this and I can video that. And
like a hard drive.
So you're probably right. Yes. There's this human thing in us where it's not like we would benefit. Like maybe the big mystery, Tom, is that we need sleep because it's the only time we are forced to put down our crap and go to bed. You know, like we have to. But then if you don't sleep, what, you know.
Well, and so why wouldn't you just, you know, cram like 4 days in.
Mm, that's a good
all
point.
At once.
Yeah, or maybe that's how we do well, it. We regulate it
then,
so that
then the Yakuza come after you, and you got to get saved yeah. by Ice-T.
And by the way, the Yakuza and similar organizations, remember, they won't have to sleep either. So,
yeah.
So I like the idea of a sleepy criminal or a sleepy terrorist, because if a sleepy terrorist says, "Oh, you know, I was going to do this terrible thing today, but I think I'm just going to go take a nap," like that's better than I've got all the energy in the world and I'm just going to blow up as much stuff as I can. So
well, there will still be alcohol, presumably. There will be things to make one point. Drowsy.
There's sleep and there's passed out.
Yeah,
that's right.
See, I'm saying I don't have all. There's no way that I'm thinking of all the contingencies, and there are a lot of them, and there some of them are kind of gnarly. So
it's an interesting theory, though.
That's the fun part. Yeah, of the forecast.
It kind of feels possible too, right? Mm-hmm. It just becomes a like, yeah. I think sleep becomes a nostalgia play. Mm-hmm. You know, like you know what? I'm just gonna sleep tonight instead of using my little device because
yeah. The idea is it would be safer. Like right now, pills can be used to wake you up and keep you awake and
right.
to levels of abuse if it comes to that. And there are pills that'll put you to sleep because you can't get sleep. So we're already in lots of technological ways controlling our sleep patterns, or some are. I won't say blanketly everybody is, but because that's already a thing, it just makes sense to me that we'll get to a place where we are able to control all of our, you know, our sort of physical imperatives. Like I would like to say, hey, I'm going on a 3-week vacation to India. I would like to turn off all the mechanisms that make it so I have to eat because I don't want to get some
of
weird.
If I'm going on a 3-week trip to India, I want to turn off the mechanism that affects my circadian rhythms and makes me have jet lag. And
right.
This thing should cure jet lag too.
Right.
Where's the pill that lets you eat everything you want? I mean, I'm on the other end of the spectrum. I want to be able to eat everything I want to and not, you know, and still be able to fit in my pants.
Yeah. I want the I want it to take away those side effects of being a gluttonous pig.
Plug in for an hour and your metabolism just goes hog wild.
Sure.
Why
not? I would
sign up for that.
I've got this fitness band now and it tells me all sorts of cool things about myself. When will it start, you know, I don't know, injecting weird serums into my arm? I like these kinds of thought experiments, and if people haven't seen, trust me, it's a little rough, so I don't recommend it for everybody. But if you haven't seen Black Mirror, currently all on Netflix.
Oh, boy.
It's really worth doing because it is all about, it's basically, I think it's fair to describe it as Twilight Zone for a technological age.
Yeah, the Black Mirror is the phone screen.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
And they're saying, you know, what happens in a world where we exaggerate the effects of these devices.
Yeah, and it's fascinating, and it makes your brain work, and it made me think of future, don't have to
not
sleep
having
tech.
To sleep.
Yeah.
I think there may be a little bit of your podcast schedule in that wish too.
Maybe a little bit. That's a good pause. All right, we should fold on out of here. Before we do though, we'd like to give you guys a chance to talk about your stuff. Let's start with Adam. Where can people find more about the MacCast if they haven't already discovered its greatness?
Yeah, so I do a weekly Mac and Apple show. I've been doing that for 13 years now, right? 12, mm-hmm. 12 plus years, let's say. And you can find it at maccast.com. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can find me at MacCast. It's pretty much MacCast everywhere. And then if you're more iOS inclined, I do the iOS show at theiosshow.com. And you can find me weekly also on the Mac show on the British Tech Network at britishtechnetwork.com.
Oh, that's right. You provide a much needed
more
American accent.
Yeah, I give the Yankee perspective over to those Europeans.
Nice. Well, it's always good to have you, man. Thanks for coming on with us today. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Stephanie, remind folks where they can find all the rad work you talked about earlier in the show.
Well, my website is stephaniedebruzzo.com, and on it you can find a little animated series I created a couple of years ago called Chimpy and Pansy. Where you'll hear my little end credit saying that I'm a person, not a brand. Little one, they are literally less than a minute each. I did 9 of them. If you're in New York next Thursday, the 12th, I'll be at 54 Below in Broadway Originals, and I will be reprising the song that I sang in Avenue Q. You can hear my voice occasionally on Nature Cat. And on PBS, my friends at Spiffy Pictures, David and Adam Rudman, put that together. It's a great show. On Sesame Street, Below the Frame can be found on Matt Vogel, V-O-G-E-L's Facebook page. and we go live or put goodies on there every Thursday. And then there's going to be a Netflix show coming up. I don't know when it's being released, but it's called Julie's Green Room. And I was a puppeteer on it, and it stars the one and only Dame Julie Andrews. It's a Henson show made for Netflix, and it sort of teaches theater arts to kids.
Oh, that's awesome. Ooh. She controls herself, though. Nobody's controlling her like a puppet, right?
No, okay. Julie Andrews is one, and she is of herself.
Yes,
of course she is. Completely and utterly.
Well, the hills are alive every time I think of her.
My girls would probably love that.
You do so many cool, fun things, Stephanie.
That's awesome. I'm blown away. I want to be a puppeteer. I also want to be a Mac expert, so don't feel bad, Adam. I'm not saying that's not cool and everything, but puppets,
oh,
man.
I was a Mac expert. Holy crap.
Puppets, man.
Believe me, things are always a little greener on the other side. But remember, I'm also a freelancer.
Sure.
So when I get to do the work, it's great, but I don't always get to do the work.
Sure.
Yeah. Believe me, I know.
Yeah, we know this feeling. Well, it was wonderful having you on as well. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Tom, do you have anything you'd like to go out on, sir?
Real quick reminder, Pilot X, the novel, comes out March 14th. We just finalized the cover, so it's heading out to reviewers and everything. If you want to know more about it, it's a time travel science fiction book. Check it out at TomHerrodBooks.com.
Nice. If you would like to find more about the kind of shows we do or this show itself, you can find the entire thing and all of its details and where to get it for free, of course, at currentgeek.com. All our contact details are there. Thank you all for watching, listening, and hanging out with us today. We will see you guys next week.